This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Kate Kessler is an associate professor at James Madison University in the School of Writing, Rhetoric, and Technical Communication. If you've been with WMRA for a while, you might remember the wonderful series Kate did in which she talked about hiking the entire Appalachian Trail solo, or the essay she did for Civic Soapbox on surviving 6 different kinds of cancer. I got word this week that Kate's in hospice up in her home state of Pennsylvania, and I thought there would be no more fitting tribute to this gutsy, caring, funny woman than her own words. Kate Kessler talks first about her Appalachian Trail adventures.
I never intended to hike the whole trail. I lived in South Central Pennsylvania, and right out my back window in my backyard was the boundary marker from Michaux State Forest. About a quarter mile beyond that was the Appalachian Trail. So I used to literally walk out my back door and through the woods just a little ways, and there was the AT. And it was just a wonderful hiking path. And I would start hiking it a little bit north. I would start hiking it a little bit south. Before you knew it, I had hit the Maryland border going south, and I had hiked up to the middle of Pennsylvania north, and that's how I got started. I never had any intention of hiking the whole thing. My pack was probably not your typical pack. I have a very small frame, and the women's packs were just not fitting, so I found an old Boy Scout pack, and I started taking stuff out of it almost immediately. I ended up with a pack that never weighed more than 15 pounds. I had a sleeping bag. I had a mat. I had multiple contractor-sized, industrial-sized trash bags. They just did everything for me. And I had one water bottle, and I had my water purification, my Aquamira tablets. I also carried about 2 pounds of granola with me, a couple of aspirin always. I always had a map, at least one map, and a pen. That was about it. Sometimes I would take a paperback book with me. Along the entire AT, there are these shelters, little three-sided lean-tos. Every one of them, or almost every one of them, has what's called a shelter register. And hikers sign in at these registers using their trail names. And I always signed in. I didn't always write anything more than my trail name and the approximate time of day and the date. And I did that in case I disappeared from the face of the earth. It would be easy for someone who was tracking me to find which way I was going and when's the last time I signed in. And I always let friends or family know the section of trail I was going to be hiking on, and so I always signed in at these registers. My trail name was Semi-Sweet, and it was given to me, as a lot of people's trail names are. They're given to them because I would take bags of Ghirardelli's Semi-Sweet or Bittersweet chocolate chips. And then I was also told by some of my friends, including a former boyfriend, that it really suited my personality because I was semi-sweet. My father especially was very concerned about my hiking alone. People who hike know that the AT is much safer than pretty much anywhere else on the face of the earth. But family members and loved ones are going to be concerned about you hiking alone, especially if you're a woman. So I did the research. I found out how many crimes had been committed, especially against women, and I found out where they were committed. And they are very, very, very few crimes. They are all clustered in North Carolina and particularly in the middle of Pennsylvania. And also at road crossings, if you're going to have troublemakers, they're going to troll up and down the road looking for single females who are hiking the trail. I'm pretty physically active on a regular basis. I probably walk between 8 and 10 miles a day anyway. But no, I didn't train, and I wasn't tired, and I didn't get sore.
Wonder Woman.
I can't really explain that, except that you know, I was used to be a long-distance runner in my 20s, and I think you have muscle memory for that sort of thing. And the other thing is I never burdened myself with a heavy pack, and I also, you know, avoided all the hiking gear. I just wore, because I don't weigh much and my pack didn't weigh much, I just wore a very comfortable pair of running shoes, so I didn't have to worry about blisters or you know, aches and pains that way. I was never, ever lonely on the trail, even for days and days and days without seeing another person. I'm not antisocial. I really like people, but I'm actually most comfortable when I'm alone. And when you're hiking, it's so simple. All you do is wake up in the morning and go, what's to eat? Since I did this in sections, one of the logistical problems was getting to and from trailheads, and the Appalachian Trail Conference maintains a list of volunteers who will pick you up at places and drive you to trailheads. So what I would do is drive my car to an end destination, and I would have made arrangements ahead of time for one of these shuttle volunteers to pick me up at my car and drive me, 100, 150 miles, however I was going to do a particular section, and drop me off at the other trailhead. Up until New England, I probably did between 25 and 30 miles a day because the train's pretty easy. Once I hit New England, actually Vermont's pretty easy too, but once I got up into New Hampshire, forget about that kind of mileage. Okay, I dropped back to 15, and then I dropped back to about 10 miles a day, and it was wonderful. And it was intense. It's very strenuous in New England. You're doing a lot of altitude change on a day. When they call it a notch in New England, it really is a pretty much a vertical up and down and up and down. And it's, you know, it's pretty vigorous. So, yeah, I dropped my mileage way back. And southern Maine is also pretty intense. But then northern Maine is easy. The most challenging part by far is this place called the Mahoosick Notch. Oh, my God.
Where is it?
Mahoosicks are in New Hampshire, and they actually blend into Maine at a place called Grafton Notch. It is unbelievable. What they call the Mahoosick Notch is a mile of boulder rocks. I mean, when I talk about boulders, I'm talking about the size of cars and houses. The tops of the Mahoosick Mountains tumbled into a valley, and the Appalachian Trail adolescent mentality of let's see how hard we can make this takes the trail across these house-sized boulders for a mile. Some of them are so big that they have made indentations into the earth, and you have to crawl under them at places, and there's actually a layer of permafrost. Even in August, there's ice under these rocks, and the some of the spaces are so small you have to take off your pack and drag, either push it in front of you or drag it behind you. It's too small to climb through with your pack on. It was just so intense, but I must tell you, I got rather impatient with the Appalachian Trail people because they really do go out of their way to make things difficult. It's part of the experience. Up in Maine, they don't bother with bridges because they get washed out, you know, so quickly. So when you have to cross a creek or a river, you ford it. And there are places where there will be a bridge a quarter of a mile up the road, but the ATC will take you through the river. My hiking gear consisted mainly of trash bags, which I used for my ground cloth, I used for my tent, I used for my rain gear, and I used for my food. And I usually carried about 4 industrial gauge trash bags with me. One of my typical outfits on a rainy day was to have a garbage bag. I had punched a hole through the top for my head and neck, and then I punched two holes for my arms. And I would then cinch it around the waist with my backpack, but I also had my backpack inside a garbage bag, so everything was waterproof. And then I would take another garbage bag, and I would put it around my head sort of like a chic, and I would take the bandana part of my headlight, and I turn the headlight part inside out, and I'd use that as like a headband for this garbage bag over my head, which would then fall over my shoulders. So I was completely waterproof with my garbage bags. I always treated my water. I know there are some purists out there who say, oh, the mountain filters your water, get back to nature, and I think that's stupid. Aquamira is my way to go. It's very simple. It's absolutely tasteless, unlike iodine. There's water everywhere along the trail. Even in droughts, there's, you know, known water sources. In fact, the Appalachian Trail was pretty much rooted along dependable water sources. Up and down the trail, there's what you call trail magic. These are people, usually people who have hiked the trail themselves, and they will sit at road crossings with coolers full of water or lemonade, boxes of donuts, bags of apples, frozen Snickers bars, and they will just sit there all day and wait for a hiker to come by and give them a treat. There's also places along the trail where there'll be little signs posted, and you'll know this is coming because hikers write about it in the shelters, you know, 2 days coming, and they'll say, so-and-so runs an informal shuttle service into this town. He'll come on a like a bi-hourly basis. He'll put up to four hikers in his van, and he'll run you into town for a pizza, and he'll run you back out. That kind of stuff happens all over the place, and it is so awesome. I tend to be rather cautious around people. I mean, I'm shy by nature and introverted, and I guess I think the world's a dangerous place, but I found that on the trail, that is not the case. Almost everyone on the trail is out there because they've got their own journey, their own thing that they're doing, and they really understand somebody who likes to be alone, and they're very amenable to that. They don't look at you like, what's your problem? Hikers look out for each other. We call it a long linear community, and you learn from reading the shelter registers which places to avoid and which places to go to. It's almost like a hobo line, you know, with the little markings. And you'll learn that up ahead, a day or two, is this really awesome farmhouse where the person has a hose out back. You're allowed to go take a little hose shower, or they're amenable to you camping in their backyard. That sort of thing is just so affirming of the goodness of life.
And here is Kate's August 2010 essay on surviving cancer.
I'm a survivor of cancer, and I've had six kinds: the reproductive trifecta, cervical, fallopian, ovarian. I'm also the winner of the skin cancer trifecta, basal squamous melanoma. The first time I was told that I had cancer, it was cervical, and it didn't cause a great deal of anxiety. The second diagnosis was a double diagnosis. I had both fallopian and ovarian. That was a whole different thing because the ovarian was inoperable. Shortly after I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, I was reading about Michael Landon, Little Joe, on the Ponderosa series, or Bonanza. And the title of the interview was The Battle of His Life. And it struck me that the words were wrong, that the philosophy behind them was wrong. How can you fight something that's part of yourself and win? I don't know if it's because I'm female, feminist, because I'm an avid gardener, or what. Maybe a dog in a past life, because I love nothing better than digging holes in a yard. But for me, a garden metaphor works so much better than a battle or a war. I'm really not a New Age person. I'm the most cynical, skeptical, pessimistic person you could ever imagine, and I would have gone for Western medicine's big guns if they had been able to help me, but surgery and chemo and radiation weren't getting all of the things that were growing, and so I had to turn alternative. And I started thinking about my body as, a garden, and you need to keep it not only clean but healthy and fertile for good things to grow. I literally started a garden about the same time, and it was so cathartic for me to dig in the dirt and pull out rocks and weed runners and things that didn't belong in my garden. And I would put little seedlings in, and nurturing those became part of my healing from this cancer. I think I'll probably always have cancer cells running around in me. I have got the short end of a genome stick. I think my job is to keep my garden as healthy a place as possible so that my immune system can keep them at bay. Something worked for me. When I went back a year later, I was told that the places that the tumors had been embedded along my abdominal lining were now scar tissue. I'm probably going to cry here because this is still, it's been 12 years and it still stalks me. My lymph fluids were now clear and I had scar tissue where I had had cancer. That's pretty miraculous stuff.
Again, Kate Kessler, teacher, hiker, all-round great gal, is in hospice. The Spark is a joint production of the WMRA Land Community and the staff at WMRA Public Radio. The Spark theme music is supplied by the Avant Gardeners of Albemarle County. Special thanks today to the Virginia Center for the Humanities and Elliot Majerzyk for production help with the Jonathan Coleman segment. And just plain old thanks to Bob Levicky, Matt Bingay, and Terry Ward. Your ideas for future conversations are oh so welcome. You can send them in through the Spark page at WMRA.org. I'm Martha Woodruff. It has been a great pleasure to be with you.